Well, hello. You're listening to Waste Matters on the Air, the show that trashes waste and how to prevent it.
88.5 and 100.7 FM. And I am Alan Pennington, a waste reduction coordinator from Marion County, and I will be your host today. And I've got this special guest, Carolyn Stein of Bring Recycling, and I'm slaughtering that, but we will talk more about that in just a second as Carolyn comes on. And I just wanted to let you know that even though you thought last week was going to be my final show, this is the one that actually is so important that you hear this information and find out the kind of legislative actions that are going to be taking place this spring and how you can get involved. Oh, there's so much to learn. And I'm really looking forward to our speaker today. So, Carolyn, it's so good to have you back today. You know, you were here, just a little less than 2 years ago, right? In 19?
I think so. Just prior to or during the last legislative session.
Okay. So, yeah, because I remember it was a while back, and we were talking about extended producer responsibility. So that seems like that's going to be our topic today. So very quickly, you are executive director of Bring. Can you tell us a little bit about what Bring is?
Sure. It's funny. I was thinking about it today. You know, Bring is a lot of things. We were founded in 1971, just after the first Earth Day. And we were created to solve a problem, which was where we are located in Lane County. Our landfill was situated on the banks of the Willamette River. So that was the same time that you had all kinds of environmental issues plaguing our country. It, you know, that same year we saw the passage of the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act. So there was, you know, kind of this, it was sort of the birth of the modern environmental movement. Well, Bring started as a neighborhood recycler. Bring stands for Begin Recycling in Neighborhood Groups. And from, you know, 1971 until here we are now 50 years later, Bring has done a lot of things. So currently the way that we operate is we are what we call an entrepreneurial nonprofit. We are largely self-sufficient in that we generate income from the sale of used building materials at our 3.5-acre facility located in Eugene, Oregon. We also offer services that we contract with Lane County Waste Management as well as with the City of Eugene to provide services. So we have a K-12 education program. We offer a free business technical assistance program called Rethink Business. We also have a construction materials reuse and recovery program that works directly with contractors and building professionals to help them recover as much material for reuse as possible. And then we do other services, including research for local municipalities. We do waste assessment sorts. And then about 4 years ago, we really saw that what we really wanted to do was pursue this idea of a circular economy. And Alan, you and I have talked about that in the past. And essentially what that is a transformation of our current processes, which is we take and extract virgin materials out of the planet. We then process them. And then when we're finished with whatever that item is, whether it's a cell phone or a washing machine, it gets thrown away. So our goal is moving forward is to how do we create a newer system that embraces the idea that everything has value all across its life cycle. So even at the end of its life, it becomes something else or can be, you know, remanufactured to be exactly what it was before and brand new. So the way that we see that happening, at least in the short term, you know, besides the voluntary programs that we're seeing businesses participate in, is a policy mechanism. And that policy mechanism is called extended producer responsibility. So Bring very specifically advocates for EPR, or extended producer responsibility policies, at the legislative level in Oregon.
It's so important that I really want to get into it, Carolyn, because you guys are taking the lead for the state, I think, or at least in my opinion, you guys are taking the lead for the state and really going to be the organization to help drive some of these home, hopefully to get legislative approval. But there's so many of them. You just sent me a ton of things that are going to get introduced this year, and I've never seen anything like it. Wow.
It is very exciting. In the past, we have a couple different existing EPR programs in Oregon. So I might just touch on that a little bit.
Yeah.
One might suggest that the bottle bill is an extended producer responsibility program. So you have a small fee when you purchase your, beer or your canned items that then you have this small surcharge that pays for the collection and the recycling of that particular bottle or plastic bottle, water bottle. We also have something called the Paint Care, and Paint Care is a project that was launched about a decade ago, where when you purchase paint at any paint store in Oregon, there's a small surcharge associated with that then pays for the collection and transportation and remanufacturing of the paint. So when you shop at Bring at our used building material warehouse, you can purchase something called Metro Paint, and that is a completely recycled product. It is made from 100% recycled content paint through this EPR program called Paint Care. And then just in the past couple of years, we passed, I believe in 2019, the Oregon legislature passed a bill for pharmaceuticals. So that's pretty exciting. They're in the process of rulemaking right now. And what that will look like is the collection of pharmaceuticals will be very accessible to all Oregonians. So imagine a drop collection site within pharmacies. So you're already going there. You can take your expired or prescriptions that you're no longer using, including some over-the-counter drugs. You can throw it into the bin, and then the pharmaceutical industry will then pay for the collection and then ultimately the destruction of those drugs, which is a far better program than we have now, which is some drugs get flushed, which we don't want to do. Other drugs, just sort of linger in medicine cabinets where they can be, fall into the wrong hands. So this kind of collection funded completely by the pharmaceutical industry just makes sense.
So given that, and I know we could talk about other ones, because there's also electronics that's out there, but I want to jump into this because I'm getting excited about this. I want to think about, Carolyn, I want to think about this very first one at the top here, the DEQ bill to modernize recycling in Oregon. This has been one that I've heard discussions on for the last almost 2.5 years. So tell us about that.
Sure. So House Bill 2065 is a DEQ bill, so an agency bill that modernizes and completely transforms Oregon's recycling system. So all master recyclers and folks remember that we had a loss of access to recycling, a lot of things we can't put in the bin anymore, and this will help us be able to do that. This bill is really exciting because it addresses a statewide list where, if it's recyclable in Portland, it's going to be recyclable in, Harney County. So it's going to be accessible to all Oregonians. It then also requires that there's some certification of the material recovery facilities. So we're not going to see Oregon plastics being shipped overseas and potentially ending up in places where they shouldn't, like open pit landfills or as ocean plastic pollution. So this is a 2.5 year process. I think what it does is it leverages the existing parts of our current recycling system that are working, and it enhances it, and it brings the brand owners or the manufacturers of packaging into that system where they are funding some of these newer aspects of recycling in Oregon. So this to me is probably one of the better things that I've seen, and I think it's gonna make a huge difference for us.
I think I agree with you on that one. It's a huge one, and it's the mother of all recycling bills. So it's a good one for sure.
It's a good one.
Yeah. So going down the list that you sent me, there's one that's a House bill. Again, people need to understand that there's bills that get introduced either start either in the House or the Senate, depending on who's bringing them forward. There's a Surf Rider EPR bill, and I'm not sure I know what that is.
Well, so this is interesting. This is the advocacy organization Surf Rider and Environment Oregon are teaming up to have a very similar type of bill to the one that I just explained, the DEQ bill. Only this is slightly different in that it doesn't, it's not known how it will change the current system or how it will build on or leverage the system that we have. So it's not really clear to me. It is essentially an EPR program for curbside recycling.
Gotcha.
So what you have are the advocacy organizations, and then, you have the DEQ process that was, you know, consensus and what I would call a compromise bill. They worked with industry. They worked with local haulers. They worked with municipalities. So I think the advocacy organizations that put this forward are basically saying that they back EPR, and they're just, you know, have their own bill to show for that.
Gotcha. And so what about, there's a plastic EPR bill coming from the Senate side, Senator Beyer.
That's right. So this would essentially require, it's also an EPR bill. It also addresses curbside recycling, although it's very specific to plastic packaging versus the other kinds of packaging that you would see in the curbside system. So this is essentially saying the same things, and it's, but most specifically addressing plastic.
Okay. So would that be just, you know, like plastic pouches, plastic? I'm trying to think of what that might include, because there's a lot of stuff that's got plastic on it. I think about the ones that just think of a package that's basically made out of gray board, but it's got a plastic cover on it.
Right.
Or, you know, a something that pops.
Yes. And if you go to the OLIS website, or or you have some of these that maybe you'll want to share with folks, there's some very specific language about this, and it does talk and speak to the specific types of plastic. What it comes down to is it's plastic packaging, period. So gotcha. Even if it's got a, you know, cardboard backing to it, that's still plastic. So this bill would likely impact all types of plastic packaging.
Gotcha. I could see that one really stirring the pot there.
Gosh. Well, I think that's what makes this really interesting, is you've got all these different bills that are really addressing the same topic, right? It's demanding that brand owners or manufacturers of packaging participate. And so what I think we'll see, and, you know, this is completely not a expert opinion, it's just my opinion, is that we're going to see something. And what exactly it looks like, it could be, a combination of all three of those. It'll be interesting. I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. And thinking of that same kind of, confusion, but collusion in a sense of the same, everything's going down the same path in a sense. There's labeling bills coming out.
Right.
One from the House and one from the Senate.
Exactly. And they're similar. They address the sale of plastic products, and they are essentially prohibiting the sale of products in Oregon that have any sort of misleading recycling information. So, for example, when you go and you buy that lettuce pack that is not recyclable, at least in Eugene, the big lettuce container that's plastic,
the clamshells.
When you go and you purchase that, there's the recycling symbol, the chasing triangle symbol on the bottom of it. Yet that material is not recyclable in many of the collection systems in Oregon. I can't recycle that here in Eugene.
I don't think you can recycle it anywhere in the state.
Yeah, and I know that Portland has some different rules, so but I would assume that that's probably true. But that's very misleading because people right. have been told that, oh, it's recyclable. I actually am working on a project right now with Lane County, where we're identifying contaminants in the recycling stream, and we're going to multifamily apartment complexes and looking in. And it's interesting when you start looking in the garbage to see what's in there, and there are, you know, plastic bags that say right on it in big, huge lettering, this bag is recyclable.
Correct.
So the labeling would address the issue. So what's also interesting is the DEQ bill has some language that addresses that. So like I said, I think what we're going to see is, you know, we mean business, and I think industry is now being told you have to come to the table here because we've got all this stuff happening. So we might as well come up with one really good compromise.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. That's a big one. And I think personally, it's really important because it has just created so much chaos, and it's given the plastic industry an excuse to not take responsibility because they kept putting that on there, knowing fully well that there really wasn't a way to recycle it in most of the world. So I love seeing that. The next one I want to talk about is one that is mattresses. And I remember when this first came up, I was like, wow, that's interesting. Why mattresses? And I realized after visiting a mattress recycling place down in Eugene there, where St. Vincent de Paul has that recycling program going on, where they basically recycle virtually 100% of the mattresses. And knowing also that mattresses are a landfill nightmare because they just create all sorts of problems. They take up so much space, and they tend to move over time in the landfill. So tell us about that bill.
Well, this bill is our third time's a charm. At least we hope so. It was introduced in the 2019 long session, the 2020 short session, and then now. This is a bill that would really help drive not only the recycling of mattresses, which are inherently recyclable. You know, you're talking about wood, you're talking about fabric, you're talking about metal. All of these things have the potential to be recycled. And it, again, would be a fee that would, and, you know, the detail, the devil's always in the details. Is it a fee that's that the consumer pays at time of purchase? Or is it a internalized fee like you would see with the electronics bill that exists in Oregon? But it would then allow for collection. It would pay for collection, transportation, and, of course, the recycling. And one of the things about mattresses is because they have value, because they have materials that are valuable, they can be recycled into all kinds of new products. And this bill creates jobs. And it creates the kinds of jobs for folks that might have barriers to traditional employment. So it's a really good bill. It's being introduced. It was introduced initially by Senator Manning. And I can't remember now who's there. But we're excited to see this finally pass.
Yeah, that's a big one. And so the next one would be solar EPR. That'll be interesting because I know that this, you know, basically the first generation of solar panels are just weren't as good, or weren't as powerful, and there's a bunch of them that are just need to be replaced. So what do you do with them? So you come up with an EPR.
Right. And this one I think is perfect for an internalized cost on the part of the manufacturers, right? It's, you know, they're just going to reach, they're going to collect, and, you know, you can take your solar panels back to wherever you purchase them or whatever in solar installer, and they then work directly with the manufacturers. So I think that this should be, you know, we'll see. I don't know the specifics, if it's an internalized cost or if it's something that gets passed on to the consumer. Those are typically the two mechanisms. And some should certainly be internalized.
Sure, absolutely. And then now there's also a couple of bottle bill Yeah. Coming up. So what's that?
So these, so there's two different bills. There's one from the House side and then also one from the Senate side. And they establish a task force and they're addressing two separate pieces of the current bottle bill. So the first part on the House side, the House bill, is going to review and look at the transparency and the finances, as well as understand siting for new collection centers. So it's going to kind of review certain aspects of the current bill, the current bottle bill that we have. Then on the Senate side, it's also this task force, but this is looking at what other types of bottles or containers should be included. So spirits, wine, things like that versus, you know, it's adding new types of containers to the bottle bill.
Yeah. So and hopefully, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I would just add that on the House bill side that's reviewing kind of the finances and the transparency, I think that's interesting. You know, there's currently when you do not return your bottles when you purchase a, you know, six pack of beer, if you do not return those, that money goes somewhere and it's meant to fund new recycling centers. And there seems to be not a lot of transparency on how much money that is that doesn't get the deposit return. So I think that this is a way to address that.
Yes. And it's interesting too, because if people don't take in their bottles and collect their dimes, that money then goes to the bottling distributors.
Right.
Correct. So it's kind of a upside down incentive. So I could see where there needs to be a lot of oversight on this and to maximize this. Because, I mean, I'm granted, I realize there's a lot of cost in order to collect these things and processing them, send them off to get them recycled. But somebody's making a lot of money off all these bottling, so it's good.
Yeah, and I think that's where that transparency comes in, is sort of understanding what that does look like.
Yeah, for sure. So if you just tuned in, you're listening to Waste Matters on the Air, KMUZ 88.5, 100.7 FM. I'm Alan Pennington, and I'm speaking with Carolyn Stein, the Executive Director for Bring, and we're talking about all these bills that are going to be introduced in the near future. So let's see. We just got to talk about the Bottle Bill Task Force. Food serviceware.
Right.
That sounds like a plastic.
Right. So these are very specifically bans. And I just want to let folks know, Bring does not do advocacy for anything other than extended producer responsibility. My purpose in sharing the bans is to let master recyclers and people that are interested in waste prevention issues what's going on. But I just want to let people know that. But this is very specifically a ban. There's two. There's a House Bill 2365, which is food serviceware, and that is plastic food serviceware. It's banning all serviceware from takeaway restaurants. I'm not sure. Like I said, there's always details in there that I haven't had a chance. Most of these just dropped in the last 24 hours. So there's a lot of details in there that I haven't reviewed, but it does specifically speak to forks, knives, spoons, and takeaway food serviceware.
Interesting. And so that we're kind of in that same vein, there's a polystyrene ban proposal.
That's correct.
Those are the kind of things you think of, like the styrofoam, you know, cups and plates and whatnot. So
yes.
Tell us about that.
Yes. So this is the polystyrene food containers. Again, takeaway would be kind of the most common application for those that we would see. But it would ban all of those in restaurants that, you know, are providing takeaway service.
You know, I'm still stunned that some restaurants still use them. I know that they work really well, but there's some issues with both off-gassing and just public perception. Most people absolutely hate styrofoam, so it's interesting. But So that'll be interesting to see how those fare. And I think polystyrene band has come up before, hasn't it?
I think it did come up in the last session. And, you know, as you recall, there was some things that happened in the last session that kind of stalled a lot of these things. So yes.
I don't think it made it. I don't think it ever got voted on. So that was probably
right.
One of those victims.
Right.
So there's this interesting, Carolyn, there's one in here that you've got, that you brought up to me. It was called Repeal of the Straw Ban. Now this is really interesting because it took a lot of work to get straws banned in the first place. So
and
there must be some blowback.
I'm assuming there is some, and at least I've heard from an equity perspective, folks that might have a disability are unable to, you know, drink from anything other than a straw. So I pulled up this bill to take a look at it to see what the specifics were, and it was truly just 4 or 5 sentences that says repeals the straw ban with the Oregon statute. I don't know any more than that.
Gotcha. Interesting.
Yeah, and interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, this stuff come up because, you know, this is, again, it's kind of at this point, some of these are like a wish list, right? So, you know, people can promote these and some, you know, just like everything else, whether we're talking about waste reduction bills or we're talking about, you know, construction or whatever, just pick a subject. There's a lot of bills out there. There are some that have been really seriously, that really have a chance, and that there's some that are just kind of, okay, Billy Bob down the street really wants me to introduce a bill for that. I'll do it. Okay. And just, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? It's there's
right.
Not necessarily going to be a lot of work put into it. And this last one down here, the chemical recycling permitting prohibition. What is that all about?
Well, that's interesting. Over the years, there's been some interest in how do we manage all of this plastic that we can't recycle? And one of the ideas is chemical recycling, which is essentially pyrolysis. It turns plastic into a fuel additive. So, you know, maybe you could put it into a pipeline, it blends with regular gasoline and it becomes, I mean, I'm sure it has to be refined in some way. It would essentially be a fuel additive. And that's what chemical recycling is. It's using pyrolysis to turn plastic back into, a fuel kind of product. I mean, plastic comes from either natural gas or oil. So this is taking it back to its kind of basic, compounds or makeup. And this would ban that process. And, you know, I've talked to several different folks on, you know, both sides and primarily understanding kind of the reason why folks don't like it. And there's this idea that we should not be putting more fossil fuels out into the world. And I think we can all agree that, you know, fossil fuels are a big part of climate change. And so saying that we would take plastic, which we have a terrible issue with plastic and a lot of it building up all over the world, and then turning into a fossil fuel is not the best option. The best option would be, you know, looping back to this idea of a circular economy is that all products are made in a way that they can be recycled indefinitely or reused. So that is where that's coming from. It's essentially banning the use of chemical recycling in Oregon.
Interesting. Wow. I had not heard about that. So that's a new one on Alan. What else have we, boy, that's a lot of them we put down there. Kind of see if there's anything that we missed. What about carpet recycling? Is that going to happen?
Well, I haven't seen the bill yet. I do know that there is a sponsor. These are the ones, most of what I know is happening. The carpet one doesn't have a bill number yet. So
okay.
I do know that the representative that was introducing it has moved committees. So typically what you're going to see is, you know, something like a DEQ bill or something like the DEQ bill is going to end up on the side of, you know, it's a House bill and it's going to end up in the Energy and Environment Committee. So CARPET is also an energy environment bill for a House bill, and it ended up, you know, the sponsor ended up shifting committees. So I'm not sure where that is right now. I'm keeping my fingers crossed, though. I think that it would be nice to see another problematic waste material being recycled.
Oh, yeah. And that one has a huge energy impact. I mean, the amount of materials, petroleum, and it's used to manufacture carpets. It's so wasteful once you have to get rid of it. So,
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, what's interesting about this one is that the bill is being brought forward, or at least the interest in the bill is being brought forward by the recyclers that are already in California. And they have feedstock from all of California's carpet because they already have an EPR bill that addresses that. What's interesting is they have so much demand for the material, which includes things like, synthetic fabrics for the outdoor industry. There's so much demand that there's a waiting list because they don't have enough feedstock to make enough from the carpet that they're getting from California. So they're really wanting a bill in Oregon that would allow them access to our carpet because they have enough of demand. So, you know, it's exciting to think that, you know, there's such a demand from the fashion industry, which we know has a huge waste problem, that they're interested in these recycled fibers.
Yes, that is amazing. That would be a huge win. And it seems like a no-brainer when you have industry asking you to do it. How could you say no? So
right.
That's a good one. And another one that you mentioned too is that sharps. These would be the needles that are left over after they've been removed from a syringe. They're dangerous. They're sharp. They could poke you. They can carry disease. Where are we with that?
Well, this, I think, is kind of a companion to the drug take-back that was already passed in 2019. Again, this would put the pharmaceutical industry responsible for a PRO, and that's one of the words that I haven't mentioned yet, but the PRO is basically the producer responsibility organization that then manages that aspect of an EPR program. So the pharmaceutical industry would then develop the PRO that would collect the sharps. And I would assume it could be done simultaneously with prescription drugs.
And that would be such a wonderful thing because I'm sure you've come across this too, Caroline, but I don't know how many times I've gotten phone calls from people wanting to know what to do with their sharps container. And when they find out they're going to have to pay, they almost break into tears because they're like, I don't have money for this. I just, you know, I spent all my money on my drugs or whatever. And it's another thing that's really a burden for, especially for folks that are, they're struggling. So that would be a huge win. And
agreed.
Then there's also a household hazardous waste bill that has, I think they were talking about that last time as well. And so that might come back.
I sure hope so. I haven't seen a bill number for this one yet. Last time it was introduced was the 2019 session in the long session. And it would bring together manufacturers. They tend to have organizations like, for example, the coatings industry is what's responsible for paints and varnishes and things like that. The household hazardous waste, I'm sure, has its own kind of, corporate organization that would then be tasked with developing a collection program. And, you know, the details are always challenging, right? Who has access? Where will they be located? There's a lot of work, and I have to commend the folks at DEQ that end up having to do a lot of that work, for the language and how we make these things work. So it's no small thing.
Yeah, it's a big thing for, I think, for Marion County. It cost us about $600,000 a year to operate our household hazardous waste facility, and it's only open, you know, twice a week, actually 1.5 times because there's some alternating days for one day. And it's so expensive. But, you know, you think of all the pesticides, all the chemicals that are sold and only partially used or left over or expired and need a safe place to be disposed of. And basically it's the ratepayers of the garbage services of Marion County that is, you know, burdening that cost. And so the folks who made all this stuff are getting all scot-free. They haven't had any skin in the game until hopefully this bill will pass and kind of put that, kind of level the playing field a little bit as far as costs go. Cause I could see us spending those dollars at $600,000 a year on more beneficial programs to reduce waste and not necessarily those kind of things. Cause we do not want hazardous waste not being disposed of properly. There's also one other one I want to talk about, Carolyn, is the right to repair bill. And that's basically the idea that you would have the legal right to repair and modify electronic devices, which you would think if you buy an electronic device, you could do whatever you want to it. But Carolyn, that's not always the case. And I know some of the big guys like Apple have really fought that. They don't want you poking around in there, even though you bought it Apple products.
Right.
So there's this bill to clarify that and make sure that it is a right here. Is that correct?
That's correct. And it has certainly had some other success in other communities and states. It particularly in the automotive industry. I think very specifically the right to repair bill for Oregon would really only address electronics and very specifically, you know, small kind of handheld phones and things like that. You know, there's this proprietary thing that has to do, I don't know, with batteries and, you know, you can't even open the phone or repair it. So this would change that. And yeah, I mean, you know, why can't we fix our phones? I mean, I promptly broke the screen on my phone that I bought 3 years ago and it's still broken.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was also hearing horror stories of farmers that, you know, their John Deere tractor broke down and they wanted to get it fixed, but they could only, it was technically illegal for them to fix it themselves. And the, cause they couldn't get in certain components and they needed to take it to a John Deere dealer only because they're the only ones that were licensed to work on them. So that's pretty crazy. So there was a lot of, I know that was one that, I think John Deere ultimately lost on that deal. There's always that effort by the companies to maximize their profits. And they could do that by not letting anybody else in and that they have basically control of it from the time you buy it to the time you dispose of it. So all of these are very interesting, Carolyn. So you've gone over a lot of things here. So let's think about all these bills. How would somebody dig in and find out more, and especially somebody who really wants to get involved in this? What do you think?
Well, I think the most important thing people can do is know their legislators. And, you know, we elect them to represent us. And everybody has a different legislator. You can find it by going to the OLIS website, which is the Oregon Legislative Information System. But you find out who your legislator is, and if you are a constituent, if you live in their district, whether it's your House representative or your Senate representative or your senator, let them know who you are. Send them an email. Tell them that you care about these bills. I think that is probably the most important thing that people can do. And, you know, they want to hear from us. They want to know, like, what's on our minds. So I think, A, get to know your legislator. This off-session time is typically the best time to do that. But since we're already there, I would say send them an email, and you can find their email, like I said, on OLIS. If you want to kind of have specific language, you can go to the Bring website. We have a template. We have an EPR toolkit that kind of gives instructions for folks on how they can get involved. There's also a most recent update to our blog, and you just go on the product stewardship tab of the Bring website. And it's going to have a letter show, talks, how do you talk to your legislator? And it gives a rundown of what we kind of know is happening. And then, of course, now we have more information about what's happening. And then I would talk with other people that are interested. You know, master recyclers are a really connected group of folks. They're, you know, they share similar values. And I think, you know, maybe you could have an online Zoom party, email writing, postcard writing kind of event. But I think that there's ways that people can learn more very specifically about the bills by going to the OLIS website and then seeing what matters to them and then reaching out to their legislators. Bring will certainly have, and I'm talking very specifically about the EPR side. So Bring will have letters and sort of petitions to sign on, and we'll offer public testimony when that time comes. And that's something else that we'll make available to people is when there is public testimony, there is a way that they'll be doing it this year via Zoom. So that would be one way to offer it, or, you know, or just submitting a letter as well. That would be another way to do that too.
Yeah. Well, you just put out a lot of possibilities there. And while you were talking about that, when you said that there was an EPR toolkit on your website, while you were explaining that, I was also multitasking, and I went to your website and saw that, and that you also have a list of the major EPR legislation on there. And it's just, I'm reiterating what you've already said, but it's a good place for folks to visit and look at. And in fact, your whole newsletter is pretty darn interesting. So, or your website, I should say. So you've got a lot of stuff there, Carolyn. Going on, man. Brings a it's you guys have come a long way from 1971, coming up here 40 years or 50 years, 50 years. My goodness,
50 years. Yeah, we certainly have. I like to tell people the story that, you know, our initial work was collecting bottles and cans, and the way that we processed glass was to smash it against a brick wall. And then we'd scoop it up into barrels and send it off. And I mean, we operated, you know, essentially in a floodplain for many, many years. So we've come a long way for sure.
Yes. Yes, you have. So, and anybody that needs, anytime you want to go to that store, you're down that in the Eugene area, you should stop by and check out their building and just the cool stuff that they have on display around it. And, you know, it's a big open space. Everybody's masked up following they're being really good there. But I would strongly encourage you to stop by and check them out because you guys are doing good things.
Yeah. Thank you.
Love to have your branch up here in Salem, Marion County. So,
I would love that too, Alan.
Yeah. For sure. For sure. So Carolyn, you got any last words for us?
You know, I think we've covered all the main points, and I know that democracy and lawmaking and all of these things is about compromise. And, you know, we may not see all the things that we want to see, and I'm hoping that we'll see at least some things that move us in the direction that we want to go, which is, you know, making it where it isn't just you and me, the ratepayers, the consumers, shouldering the burden of disposal costs or the environmental costs or the environmental injustice that comes from so many manufacturing processes. I think it's time to hold the brand owners and the manufacturers accountable. And EPR is really the mechanism that we currently have that we can at least get close to that circular economy that we all want.
Well, that was well said, Ms. Carolyn. And I'd like to thank you for coming in today, sharing your time and knowledge with us. You've been listening to KMUZ, reaching parts of Marion, Polk, and Linn counties via 88.5 FM and deep into Soul Central, Salem, and Kaiser, 100.7 FM. Join us next week for another fabulous show of Waste Matters on the Air, KMUZ, 1 o'clock. And, of course, if you want to listen to this show again and again and again or have somebody else listen to it, you could go to KMUZ.org's website. They've got podcasts of all our shows and many others. And you can find a little bit more information about that on mcrecycles.net. But I would go to KMUZ.org first. And with that, I will say adieu. Thank you all so much. It's been fun. And as an old Roman philosopher once chiseled, unless it's peace and quiet, if you don't need it, then don't buy it.